Hello, this is John Buckman, Chief of Firefighter Training for the State of Indiana. I'm here today to talk with Chief Fred Windisch of the Ponderosa Fire Department and Lieutenant David Page of the Ponderosa Fire Department, both from the Houston, Texas area. Fred, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, about myself is pretty simplistic. I had the opportunity to be employed by Shell Research, Shell Oil Company, for 30 years, and I owe a lot to that company for helping to develop me. And along those same lines, I was a volunteer firefighter since 1972 and had a lot of opportunities there to learn under some great people and become the fire chief of the Ponderosa Volunteer Fire Department. Now we are called the Ponderosa Fire Department because we have gone through a transformation of pure volunteer into paid people assisted by volunteers.
Yeah, Fred, you and I both have had a long relationship with the International Association of Fire Chiefs as well in helping create the volunteer committee and now the volunteer and chief officer section. David, you're with the Ponderosa Fire Department. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my history isn't as long as Chief Windisch is here, but I've been with the Ponderosa Fire Department about 7 years now, and about the last four I've been lieutenant. And same thing with him, I've had the privilege to train and learn under many, you know, very good chief officers and other officers in the fire department. And I think having the background with the Ponderosa Fire Department helped me make the choice to become a career firefighter in the city of Houston. And it made it a very smooth transition to becoming a career firefighter. But, you know, still having the career and volunteer aspects of it, I can see both sides of a lot of different situations.
Well, it's very good for a person to remember their roots and remember where they came from. So we certainly appreciate you starting your career as a firefighter with Houston, but remembering that you started out with Ponderosa and continuing to serve that fire department as well as that community. We're here, we're going to talk about several issues, but one of them we want to talk about first is about the combination and volunteer staffing component of a fire department. And we do not call them a volunteer fire department because there's no such thing as a volunteer fire department. It's a staffing issue. So, Fred, you got some comments about staffing?
Well, the first thing is for the fire chief to, and when I say fire chief, that means chief officers, but need to recognize that we have a responsibility to our community to assure that we have consistent staffing of some level, whatever that may be, all the time. And that means every second of every day. I think that we're all intelligent enough to understand that we have, in the volunteer fire service, we have staffing gaps. And in our case, we knew that we had staffing gaps between 5 a.m. and probably 8 a.m. and then again between 4 p.m. and 6 or 7 p.m. because people are going to work, coming home from work, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that the challenge here is for the chief officers to understand, let's fix the problem and get toward a consistent staffing situation to where at least we can rely on a base crew to handle all calls in some manner and then be supplemented by those with pagers from their home response. So with that, I think that's going to be the basis of my comments for the next couple minutes.
Well, David, you have a unique opportunity and you have a unique experience in the fact that you work at Houston Fire Department where there is consistent, reliable staffing, and then you work also at Ponderosa where they have volunteer as well as part-time career staffing. Talk a little bit about the differences there and just the staffing patterns.
Well, in the city of Houston, we always have four guys on the fire truck, and there's always at least an officer, a driver, two firefighters. There is the opportunity to, quote, ride up a level, so you might not have necessarily a captain on every apparatus, but they always keep four on there, four firefighters in a mixture combination, what have you. And what Chief Winters has done with Ponderosa is he's hired full-time guys, he's hired part-time guys, he's supplemented that with a volunteer night staffing crew where volunteers, two or three nights a month will stay at the fire station and run calls out of that, run calls out of our headquarters, which is our busiest station, and they supplement the paid crew, and vice versa. The paid crew supplements the volunteers, and like you said, between 5 in the morning and 8 in the morning, you're going to have at the minimum 4 guys. So that, you know, getting a first out apparatus on the road, like you said, relying on the other guys to get going. We're fortunate to have mutual aid agreements with other fire departments, so we'll always have, we seem to have the same number of guys showing up as we do in the city. Now, we have fewer trucks coming in the city, but we've restructured our, you know, box alarm assignments and stuff like that to get the adequate staffing that we need to show up on a scene to help mitigate the scenes.
Yeah, for those departments that don't have the full-time career staffing, that pendulum as it swings every day creates some significant challenge for officers, because it's about how do you develop a strategic plan at a structure fire when you don't know how many people you got coming. Either one of you like to address some of those concerns and how you handle that?
Well, you know, we have to go back in time, and my volunteer roots run deep. And there's always, and a chief officer needs to admit this, there's always that fear that you won't have adequate staffing at significant events. And as a chief officer, we need to minimize that fear so that we can understand our members' capabilities of response. I'm not even going to talk about capabilities of performance. I'm talking about capabilities of response. So one challenge that we constantly have is to assure minimum staffing of sorts. How do you address that? You can address it like Lieutenant Page said. You can address it with automatic aid, which we do extensively in our area. I mean, I can pick an address, 3600 FM 1960 West, and I use this example a lot. It's the Klein Fire Department, as Ponderosa's Champions, in Little York on the initial dispatch, because we have eliminated boundaries in our area, because we have all focused on what we need to do the job at a structure fire at the onset, not mutual aid where you get there and you call for help. So there's various ways to address staffing, and that's just one way.
I agree with that. And just from the station I'm at one of the satellite stations at Ponderosa, where I'm a lieutenant at, and we're the slowest station out of the three, but given the automatic aid with the other neighboring departments, we probably make as many, you know, working structure fires, and that keeps the guys going because, you know, they like to make the fires, and so they like to be there, they like to do their, you know, that's what they're there for, a lot of them. And having the automatic aid there, it's the closest fire trucks. It doesn't matter who, you know, whose department it is, whose area it is, and I guess I've been fortunate enough to have been brought up in that mindset. So I really don't see, I haven't gotten to see the other side, like Chief Winter's talking about with the calling for mutual aid once you get there. We always have, I know that certain crews are coming, and that helps as a company officer by knowing that, you know, Klein is coming or Spring is coming. Those are two of our closest mutual aid departments. And knowing that I have a truck coming from Station 1 with a crew, it just helps the incident go a lot smoother, and I don't have to worry about who's coming or, you know, is it going to be an adequate crew.
That is a huge issue for many chief officers, to admit that they need help, and they need help consistently and regularly. And we would encourage all chief officers to make the decisions based upon their community needs, not their fire department needs, because that's the one who suffers. It's the community. It's you only have 2 fire trucks going to a structure fire when you need 4, but you don't call mutual aid till you get on scene, confirm it's a working fire. So I think all 3 of us would agree that that's a huge message that all chief officers need to understand. Don't make a decision based upon what's best for the fire department. Make it on what's best for the community. Fred?
Philosophically speaking, and I know my guys get tired of hearing me say this, but it's part of that leadership that you need to constantly reinforce that number one is the organization. Now I'm not going to talk about community. I'm not going to talk about safety. I'm going to talk about how the organization works. The highest priority is organization. The second priority is your station. And the third priority is the individual member of that fire department. Now, let me reemphasize, it's not about safety, it's not about the community. If we focus on our mission, don't allow mission creep. Our mission is service. If we think of our organization first, all the time, then we will determine specifically what our mission accomplishments will be. Sometimes we as chief officers allow our emotions to get involved, and secondly, sometimes we let our members' emotions get involved, like, oh, I'm at station two, I have less runs, so let me run that one. Well, you know, the reality is people out there call 911 because they desire our service. Let me rephrase that. They require our service, and we should be focused on giving them the best service that we can.
And like I've always been taught, and it's something that just rings true in the volunteer area, it's better to have them and not need them, referring to people, fire trucks, whatever, on a call, than to need them and not have them. That's the worst feeling in the world. And the one good thing that Chief Winish lets us, you know, company officers do is be in charge of an incident, be incident command. And I've run a lot of fires that have seen, you know, I've looked out to my accountability guy and asked him what crews I had, and he's looking back at me with an empty slate, and that's
a bad day.
Exactly. You know you're behind the eight ball then, and it's a lot better, and I've learned since then, you know, to look back and see four or five crews, and because I've been on that side when I've come out of a fire and been tired and gotten a new air bottle and had to go back in and then, you know, go to my third bottle and keep going back because there's nobody out there to relieve me. And it makes the incident, once again going back to that, it makes the incident go a lot smoother when you have the people, when you have the apparatus. You know, the simplest way to put it is the more people, the quicker the fire is going to go out. I mean, it's
better the service to the people.
Exactly. The people don't care what color the fire truck is that shows up. They don't care. They can't tell you apart from the guy next to you when you're all geared up. They see a fire truck show up, and it makes them feel better. Now, after a while, if you're, you know, not doing the job you're supposed to do because whatever the problem is, adequate resources, water supply, you know, whatever, they don't understand that. The public doesn't understand. They see the fire getting bigger. They see the fire getting out of control. They see all that stuff. So,
Fred has another comment. We'll go into that capability discussion in just a minute.
I just want to reinforce, and David, if hopefully no one at home will hear me say this, but David, you keep this a secret, okay?
Okay.
But, one of the things that a fire chief should do is give confidence to the members. And I want to tell you that one of the secrets of being a good fire chief is that you allow them to fail. Now, that can be, you know, anybody can sit there and laugh at that statement. But here's the point. If there's a leader available who can coach a junior type officer, believe me that in the future that junior officer will do better the next time. So you got to be within arm's reach, but allow them to fail and help them along. I can tell you that David just recently commanded a 3-alarm fire. It was not our district, and he was first in. We have a duty officer program to where we have a pool of 14 people, qualified individuals. They are not chief officers by any means in our organization, but they have the capabilities. And we really refer to them as our district chief because we're not big enough to have that many district chiefs, you know, even in our three-station department. And so this particular night, I hear the page go out. I hear the page go out, and I hear Page go out, David Page. And I knew that we were in good hands because I have witnessed David's performance as an incident commander. He gets there, and it's an auto repair shop and radiator repair shop. Chemicals, fire, combustibles, flammables, everything's burning. He goes first alarm, second alarm, third alarm. He didn't have to have a chief officer to make that determination. He was trying to get ahead of the curve, get that sufficient apparatus and manpower, plus we had a water supply problem. But the bottom line is that if a fire chief will allow his people to develop, it will come back to help in the long run. And that is a prime example, a real-time 2 weeks ago example that you listeners can do. Now remember, the fire chief, sometimes we spin our bugles on our collars. Sometimes you have to swallow those bugles and let them run with the ball.
Great point, Fred. Great point. Because the fire chief, just because you're the fire chief doesn't mean you have to do everything. And that's critically important from a leadership standpoint, talking about development, and we'll go into that area in a minute too. But, you know, because you have to develop your future officer. You have to develop the future leaders. But David talked about mutual aid, and he mentioned about their capability. And let's talk about how do we improve capability? How do we look at our mutual aid companies, and how do we measure their capability? It's not their ability, it's their capability to do the job that you need them to do. Either one of you like to tackle that?
Well, I'll start with capabilities. First of all, this is highly localized. And in our area, we are blessed. Now, granted, this is the North Houston area with a lot of people. Our little 13-square-mile area has 50,000 population with approximately $2.5 billion, that's with a B, assessed evaluation. Our neighbors, Klein Fire Department, have 7 stations. And by the way, we're an ISO 3, a real one. They are an ISO 3. The 7 stations, they have over 120 volunteers. Their model is a little different than ours, but still we're similar. And, you know, they cover about 90 square miles, or 60 square miles with 7 stations. Tremendous responsibilities. I could go on. We can go Spring Champions, name them all. It doesn't matter. But the point is, we're all about the same level of performance. We all believe in state certification. We all believe in not allowing our new volunteers to participate until they've had a certain level of certification. And that could be as little as introductory in the state of Texas, which is still a darn good level, to basic. And that's really good. That's in the neighborhood of 140 seat hours. And so, you know, when we look at our area, I don't really have a concern that we have unqualified people coming, meaning capabilities. I can also tell you in our area, we've all worked together to establish this automatic response system. We have similar apparatus. We share apparatus. I mean, I can tell you the story that Klein just redid their assignment system to where they really, really got down and dirty, and they went to the root of a box assignment, meaning a structure assignment. Depending, you can go like half a mile to the east, half a mile to the west, and it'll bring a platform in from Champions or our platform from Ponderosa versus just kind of overload it with stuff. So we've become very, very customized through the CAD, computer-aided dispatching, to where we have sat down and agreed that we're still focusing on the customer. We are still focusing on high capabilities because we're all kind of on a level playing field, and we really don't care, as David said earlier, what color the truck is. So the bottom line is capabilities in our area, we really don't care about. Now, as a point of advice, this is where the fire chief has to spin those bugles. If you have people that aren't qualified, I'm going to suggest to you, I'm going to recommend, keep them out in the probationary realm somewhere. Give them an orange helmet. Give them a different color, whatever the case may be. But don't endanger your other members. Don't endanger them. Let them learn over a period of time. Develop some kind of system to where we build our base capabilities to a level that we can all depend on, because we're all in this together.
Coming from a company officer, line officer viewpoint, as far as capabilities go, we do a lot of, I use, for instance, the two mutual aid companies we mutual aid with the most out of my station would be Springs 75s and Klein's 37th stations. And what we've done in the past is we've gotten together with those crews, and at our training facility at Station 3, we'll get together with the three of those crews and have a multi-company drill. And we'll, you know, lay hose, do fire attack. We have a wonderful four-story burn building, computer simulation, the whole nine yards. It's awesome, to say the least. And both those other crews will get in, and we'll have, you know, maybe another mutual aid station from Spring get in. And And that just helps us to know, hey, what are these guys bringing for us? You know, it gets us, you know, become friends with these guys, not just, you know, working, not just a working relationship, but a friendship as well. And it helps out in the long run. And when they show up, you know, you don't have to necessarily tell them to do something. You do, but it's not something you have to spell out for them. They know what they need to do. They've worked with you before. They know how you work. We know how they work. And it just makes everything go a lot smoother.
There's a huge difference between telling and showing. And that's what you're saying. I give them an order, and you know they're capable of carrying out that order.
Exactly.
Without having to be shown how to raise an extension ladder, for example. Ladder to the roof. I need the roof ventilated. You quit thinking about it. You know they can do it.
Right. And going back to what Chief Winters was saying earlier, the fire a couple weeks ago I was command of, it really came into play there. Is I was saying things on the radio, and I almost didn't even have to complete my thought. My accountability officer, which happened to be my little brother, he's an outstanding, he's coming up just, I don't know how to put it.
He's amazing.
There you go, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I would ask him, you know, my division officers would tell me things that they needed, and I would call him on the radio, and he would be listening already, and he would already have crews ready to go. A spring crew, I had somebody tell me that they needed a 5-inch lathe from a hydrant. And the spring crew that pulled up automatically told me, they said, hey, we're staged at the hydrant, we're going to lay you the 5-inch. And so it's things that, it's the guys, and for lack of a better term, they have enough snap about them to know that this is what needs to be done at a fire, and I know that command's going to ask me to do this so that I don't have to necessarily spell it out for them or show them. I can just tell them. And sometimes I didn't even have to tell these guys what to do. The truck crew showed up. Our ladder truck was the first one in, Tower 61. They came off the truck with their saws. They came off with their forcible entry tools. They knew they weren't going to be fighting fire right off the bat, and they knew exactly what they had to do. They opened the building up and let the next crews come in. And sometimes it's hard for guys to show up, and you know they want to put the wet stuff on the red stuff, and that's not always the case. And it turned out to be a good idea.
Well, capability relates to training, and training is a critical component of either a career or a volunteer firefighter's career. And we would encourage all the listeners to make sure, one, that you train as often as you can to make sure that you're competent in the skills that you need for your particular fire department. Each fire department is a little different, so our skills are different. If you don't have an aerial ladder, you obviously do not need to know how to raise an aerial or put an aerial ladder up. But you do need to know how to get dressed. Most everybody needs to know how to pull hose, squirt water, start an extrication device, all those basic tools. Concentrate on your basics, because if you understand the basics, you can probably carry out an order on the fire ground. Well, let's move into our final topic. And David, we're going to aim this question at you first, and that is, you know, how do you impact the future of the members of the Ponderosa Fire Department? You're a lieutenant. You're at the first level of officer. But how do you impact the future?
Well, I think a perfect example, going back to my little brother there, he's been in the department now, he's going on 4 years. He's only 19 years old, and he's already completed fire school. He completed the Ponderosa Junior program. He went to Cyfair College and got his state commission. He's a commissioned firefighter now, and he's following in my footsteps, so to speak. He's signing up to take the Houston Civil Service test. And so right there is a perfect example. But what I like to do with my guys is, you know, not necessarily just see them at the fire station. You know, we'll go out, we'll go have some dinner or something. We'll get together, watch a game, you know, just hang out as a group. And a lot of times that helps you bond better. And it's always leading by example and showing the guys, you know, how to do certain things and the right way to do certain things, and showing them that you can do it. Because if they just see you telling them how to do something or asking them to do something and not seeing you do it, they're gonna think that all I'm there for is just to talk to them and just say, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, that is a critical component of leadership, and that is not only do you talk the talk, but you walk the walk as well.
Correct.
And that you demonstrate that you're capable of doing the things that you ask them to do. Fred?
I want to talk about organizational culture. And don't let that scare off some of you listeners, but the reality is we all have a culture in our own organizations. And I want to be, and I said this to myself, again, hopefully they're not listening in Houston, but I said many, many, many years ago, I wanted to be the best volunteer fire chief that I could ever be. And that was my goal. And with that, I hung out with people like John Buckman and others who would help me, and they have. And that has spilled over into our organizational culture. I can specifically state that our organization will not accept failure. Our organization is on a road to continual improvement. Our organization doesn't settle for second best. That's the culture of our organization. We just started a recruit class Saturday to where I told the class, I believe, those are strong words, I believe that the fire chief must begin the orientation of new members because it's important for the fire chief to lay out the culture of the organization. It's the expectations, it's the potential of allowing people to understand that failure is not an option, as the old movie goes. And it's just, I don't know how to overemphasize the fact that it's ultimately important for the leaders in our organizations to commit to themselves and to the organizations that the expectations are nothing less than spectacular. We cannot accept failure as an option.
Fred, thank you very much. That brings us to a conclusion, but I want to thank David and Fred for coming in to sit down with me today to talk about this. Fred, you got a book that was recently published. Tell us a little bit about that.
Jones and Bartlett Publishing, A Leadership Guide for Combination Fire Departments. Myself and Fred Crosby, the Fred Squares, if you will, from Hanover, Virginia, we put some various authors together and created what we believe is the, I won't call it a blueprint, but it's a roadmap. There's a difference between a roadmap and a blueprint of how a combination fire department should be organized and run. So that particular book is on the market and it's doing okay. I believe that a fire chief should never stop learning. I think one of the faults of some of us in the volunteer fire service is that we get to a certain level and we stop learning. It's our own decision. And we should always accept the fact that we never stop learning, just like our firefighters should never stop learning.
Fred, thank you very much. I'd like to end with a little quote, a little different than what you may have heard of before, of like, if you don't know where you're going, you won't know when you get there. If you don't know where you are, any road will take you there. If you don't know where you are going, then no decision will take you there. Think about it. Have a good day. Thank you all very much. This is John Buckman for the Indiana Firefighters Safe Initiative.